Today, we're joined by Vincent Boone, a seasoned founder and community expert responsible for building some of the world's most successful online communities, the likes of PlayStation, GIFGAF, Telefonica, Airbnb, and many more.
It was really started off as something that I just did for fun. I was working for a company called Eidos. They make Tomb Raider, Championship Manager, those kind of games. Yeah, I basically asked them, could I actually set up a community for them to test a game that I was working on, which was a Championship Manager. And we started off with just a couple of hundred people and eventually scaled that up to about 20,000 people actually testing this game. Had a lot of fun, you know, talking with them. Yeah, eventually the game launched and it had a lot of features that the community had come up with. And I thought, wow, you know, this is really fun. This is kind of what I want to do with my life.
And you were one of our expert contributors to the report, and you've got a couple of key takeaways that you're going to share with us today, Vincent.
I mean, obviously the report is a great piece of work and I'm not surprised it took you 6 months to complete. There's a lot of information in there. So yeah, it was very, very good to see. There was so much to choose from, right, within the report itself. In terms of, well, where shall I pick out a few little things?
It's great to have you here, Vincent. Why don't you say hello and introduce yourself? Hello and welcome to the Digital Community Leaders Podcast, where we chat with community managers, champions and founders about their experience leading and supporting digital communities. My name's Pete Heslop and I lead the team here at Steadfast Collective, and we exist to craft digital applications that bring people together. We created the Digital Community Leaders Podcast to be a bite-sized look into what it takes to start, grow and scale digital communities. And today we're joined by Vincent Boone, a seasoned founder and community expert responsible for building some of the world's most successful online communities, the likes of PlayStation, GIFGAF, Telefonica, Airbnb, and many more. It's great to have you here, Vincent. Why don't you say hello and introduce yourself?
Oh, thank you for having me, Pete. And hello, everyone listening there. Yeah, as Pete said, I'm Vincent Boone and started my community journey a long time ago, kind of like, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. And yeah, this really started off as something that I just did for fun. And, you know, yeah, started off the first communities on IRC, which was like a chat program back in the day. And yeah, while I was kind of like doing that and running some guilds and all of that kind of good stuff, I was working for a company called Eidos. They make Tomb Raider, Championship Manager, those kind of games. Yeah, I basically asked them, like, you know, could I actually set up a community for them to test a game that I was working on, which was a Championship Manager online game, which is kind of like Football Manager type thing. And yeah, they basically said yes. This was the first time they'd ever done something like this, so kind of like close testing a game, which is now pretty standard. You know, a lot of games companies do that. But back in those days, it was really very new. And it was very rudimentary how we set it up. We literally created a little website where, you know, each kind of field that you could fill in was linked directly to my bug database, and people could submit bugs. And we started off with just a couple of hundred people and eventually scaled that up to about 20,000 people actually testing this game.
Wow.
And I started a good community with them, had a lot of fun, you know, talking with them. And yeah, eventually the game launched and it had a lot of features that the community had come up with, you know, implemented into the game. And I thought, wow, you know, this is really fun. This is kind of what I want to do with my life. And because obviously it was the very first time that I'd ever done something like that. After that was finished, that project was kind of like done. So I thought, well, where can I go? Luckily, at that moment, PlayStation was actually setting up their first community. So this was in the days of PlayStation 2. So that's how long ago it is. And I joined PlayStation and, you know, helped them set up their community, which eventually covered like 10 different languages and, you know, many different countries and all of the software and hardware that PlayStation put out. So, yeah, and that's kind of like how I, you know, yeah, got more and more into, you know, communities, which eventually led to GIFGAF, which is quite well known in the UK. And yeah, from there, set up Standing on Giants, which is my company that basically manages and runs communities for lots of big brands, such as you mentioned, Airbnb, I don't know, Lenovo Legion laptops, and many, many others, Heineken, and I don't know, Mars, you name it. Lots of cool companies to work with. So yeah, that's kind of like my journey in a snapshot.
It's really good. And I think you're being really modest. So when you mentioned the community manager community, what year, do you remember what year that was?
Oh, you mean the football manager.
Sorry, championship manager. Sorry.
Yeah, that was probably 2002.
Okay.
I think, yeah, probably something like
that. It's impossible now to think of EA, just to keep kind of on that football game conversation, it's impossible now to think of EA launching a version of FIFA or whatever it's now called, EA Sport or whatever they've, EA Football, without it being, the launch being driven by community influencers, massive hype cycle around a subset of community members having access first, streaming that access, and all of those kind of touch points which build excitement to eventually it landing on people's PlayStations. But you're talking way back in the day. And I was surprised actually there, you mentioned obviously it started quite small, but by the time you finished, it was like 20,000. That's quite a big number for quite an early days of what we're talking about, gaming communities, and still fairly early on in the age of the internet, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, and this was all, you know, through marketing activity. There were a lot of people that were like absolutely crazy about the game. Championship Manager was really the first of its kind when it came to football management games. So we had a very large base of people who were absolutely nuts about the game. So, you know, from that perspective, it was relatively easy to find people who were interested enough that they would actually, you know, join us in testing that game. But even on PlayStation, you know, when we started that, this was PlayStation 2. And a lot of people don't actually know this, but PlayStation 2 could go online. I was running a lot of like, you know, online events, even for the PlayStation 2. And that was also, you know, and we even had a closed beta program for that as well. So there was all beta test community for the PlayStation 2 players as well. And there we had to, you know, always send physical discs still, right? So that was the only way to do it. So, you know, we had to set up, yeah, specific servers, all of that kind of stuff to allow people to actually play these games. And you had to really sign up for it, sign NDAs and all of that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, I bet.
And, yeah, there was quite a thriving community just for that, and which was completely closed off for, you know, no one in the public could even see that kind of stuff. And it was all very, very early on stuff. Yeah, it was really good.
That's really fun. And what I really enjoy is, like you mentioned there on the Championship Manager, is generally the niche of the community, especially around sport, but all sorts of random things, is people are so fanatical about it. Like, you know, you only have to type in your, you know, there's probably, if you own a classic car, there's probably a forum dedicated to that classic car, and there'll be folk in there who know everything about that classic car or this particular golf course or whatever your thing is. There is a small group of people somewhere on the internet, Reddit is testament to this, right? Or people who are absolutely fanatical about that thing. And I really love that those small, really focused communities actually have a massive impact when it, you know, if run correctly, when it comes to things like product development, support, and just generally trying to grow that thing.
Absolutely. And yeah, like I said, I mean, this was really the first of its kind. Right. So, you know, yeah, the fact that I had the ability to really work with the producer as well as with the developers of that game was, yeah, really kind of unheard of. Mm-hmm. And the fun thing was really is like, as, you know, these people were testing the game for bugs, they were so, you know, enthused about the game that they started creating their own kind of like leagues and ladders, right? And to help each other kind of like, all right, who's winning? You know, out of all of those kind of things. And so that whole idea of what they came up with, we then actually implemented into the game. And equally, they also started creating like newsletters, right? So kind of like, you know, roundups of what had happened, you know, in the last week with all the different games that people had played. And that was all purely created by the community, right? That wasn't even part of the game yet. And you know, as we were kind of like discussing these things with the producer and developers, they also thought, ah, that's really cool. So they started really adding all of those kind of things in. And then obviously, as soon as the game launched, it immediately had sort of like, you know, 20,000 people, you know, from day one. Right. And so, you know, that also obviously helps fill out the game a bit more as well. So, you know, on launch, whenever anyone new comes in, they're like, oh, my God, there's so many people here already. Right. It already feels like it's, you know, like, really busy and, you know, a lot of people in there. So, yeah, it really helped with the launch as well. And that's why it kind of like clicked at that point for me where I thought, yeah, this is really fun. You know, like the kind of thing that used to be a hobby for me. Equally, like at that moment, I was running the London Poker Meetup. Right, so this is again early 2000s, and I used a platform called Meetup.com. And yeah. You know, I started off with four people in a pub, right, playing some poker, and that eventually grew out to about having 200,000 members. Right, this was all just off the back of just having some fun and just enjoying myself. And then I thought, wow, I can actually earn money with this. This is actually possible. All right, cool. I want to look more. And I was very lucky that PlayStation started at that point, because community really wasn't a thing yet. And I kind of like grew into that. But yeah, it was really, really good. Or a great combination of things, because I really wanted to work in the computer games industry. And I wasn't quite sure what job I was going to get yet. But yeah, that kind of like came together in terms of community management, funnily enough.
Wonderful. Thank you. And you were one of our expert contributors to the report. So in September, we launched the Digital Community Leaders Report, which was a 6-month project where we surveyed the community professionals to better understand the industry. The report is now available at communityleadersurvey.com, where you can download it for free, or you can order yourself a fancy printed copy. You've had a chance to look through the report, and you've got a couple of key takeaways that you're going to share with us today, Vincent. So should we jump straight into what your kind of first takeaway is?
Yeah, of course. I mean, obviously the report is a great piece of work, and I'm not surprised it took you 6 months to complete. There's a lot of information in there. So yeah, it was very, very good to see. Really, really happy kind of like to read through it, great contributors, it was, a really great piece of work. So, well done on that, Pete, that looks great. There was so much to choose from, right, within the report itself in terms of, where shall I pick out a few little things, to potentially, talk a little bit more about. And, one of the things that's kind of like surprised me actually, 20 years on plus from when I started, was one of the little tidbits in there, which was talking about, do community managers or people who manage, larger projects like that, do they actually have a documented strategy, right, and a funded roadmap to help the community succeed? And to find out that through that report, only 29%. Of respondents actually had one in place. I was actually quite surprised about it. I thought, wow, this day and age, and especially with the amount of information there is these days around community management, I was quite surprised that so few people actually have a proper strategy in place. That was kind of like, one of the real takeaways that I had. I thought, there is quite a lot of information already out there around, creating a strategy for a community. Yeah, if you're running something which I think is quite complicated as a community, then, ensuring that you have that kind of like, real documented strategy that helps you kind of like really underpin all of the goals that you want to achieve, it's much easier, to do that when you've actually thought something else, like, all right, what do I want to achieve this year? Right. Mm-hmm. To actually work towards those goals rather than kind of like, just going like, oh, well, the community's working, people are talking, and that's good enough. Yeah. I think, certainly these days, most of my communities are obviously run for the benefit of particular corporations, institutions, organizations. And so therefore, I usually match, what we do within the community to the kind of goals that the company or organization has, right? And so it's never just a sort of like, all right, well, it's there and, people can kind of like talk to each other. It is usually like, we as community managers try and achieve something with the members that are there. Right. And you're trying to achieve particular goals, with the organization, clarify certain things. And yeah, you really work towards, certain aspects of what that company is trying to achieve. So to find that only 30%, roughly, of people actually work on something like that, I thought was quite surprising. Yeah.
And at Standing on Giants, I'm going to take a leap here and guess that you help folk with their strategy and kind of roadmaps. How often are you, as a team and as with the organization you're working with, review it, refer to it, and kind of refine it to make sure that it doesn't become kind of a dusty document that just sits in someone's inbox, but actually becomes kind of part of something which is living and breathing?
Yeah, I mean, really, we take a proper look at the community strategy on a year-by-year basis, right? So every year, we really sit down and say, right, well, what's the strategy for this coming year, right? What is it that we want to achieve in the coming year? And then throughout the year, you're kind of like, you know, measuring against that. So, you know, that can be obviously for the community managers themselves, it's usually monthly basis. But, you know, when you sit down with the company, it's probably more like a quarterly basis, right? Where we're kind of saying like, well, on a quarterly basis, right? You know, these were the things that we were kind of like targeting on completing, you know, where are we, right? And then on top of which, over the year, you often kind of like, you know, shift and change a little bit depending on what's happening within the company or the organization. So, you know, things inevitably come up throughout the year. And so you will adjust, you know, your kind of like your goals and the things that you want the community to get involved in as the company evolves. So, you know, you do your broad strategy for a year and then you adjust it throughout the year as you go along. Yeah. It's very important for us for sure. Yeah,
I agree. And I feel it feels like there's going to be some folk who filled this out, who say they don't have a strategy and maybe they don't feel like they're big enough or they have the budget to do so. But it also feels like, you know, a strategy document for someone like PlayStation is going to be expansive. It's going to involve many different stakeholders, many different key elements. But actually, it could just be a sheet of A4 with just some basic guiding principles and what you want outcomes to be. Like, you could strip it right back to be something fairly simplistic, but ultimately, if you don't kind of know where you're aiming for, then you're going to get so tied up in the day-to-day doing of running the community, you're never going to get a chance to actually kind of think about the community, because there is so much to do day-to-day for a community manager that it's so easy to kind of step back and actually have a look. And I guess even just the practice of putting together a strategy document gives you time and space in your diary where you're like, I do have to think about this.
No, absolutely. Yeah. No, for a community manager, it's very easy to get lost in the community. You know, just having the conversations, you know, fighting fires where the fires are, you know, and just, yeah, kind of like, you know, be reactive rather than proactive. Right. And, you know, that's the thing. I think that's changed a lot, you know, over the time that I've been managing communities, is that, you know, yeah, in general, you know, it's just professionalized a lot more, right? As community managers, we have, you know, just looked at communities much more around, okay, how can we be proactive about these things, right? What outcomes do we want, rather than, you know, just letting things happen. And as the business or the organization does things, the community responds, and then you get to work sort of like, oh, how do we deal with all of this? And, you know, and yeah, that's what I mean, where, you know, yeah, it's really changed to being much more proactive, where you're aware of the different things that the community or the company or the organization is doing, and you're preparing for that. So it doesn't, you know, kind of like, you know, drop on your table and go like, all right, now we have to deal with it. You know, you have to already thought about it. You often work with some of your more highly engaged members, you know, letting them in on some of the things that, you know, are going to come out, some of the things that you're releasing, to kind of already see, you know, how they would react, right? And then, you know, that can help you formulate, yeah, different kind of like answers or responses to, yeah, when the mass of people comes in. So, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do, I think, as a community manager to kind of help responses like that. I think a really, you know, great example of that is still from the GIFCAF days, for example, where we did a price rise, right? So, you know, the fact that you're doing a price rise is never going to be good. Right. You're always going to think like, well, people are inevitably going to go like, well, I don't like this. Right. Now I have to pay more. And so there we did a lot of work already with, you know, the kind of like, yeah, the members that were there that were very, you know, engaged with us. And as that whole discussion started, because we actually made it quite open, where we said, look, you know, in order for us to continue to be sustainable, we do have to increase the prices, right? And we actually made it a relatively open question where we simply said to the community, well, you know, considering that this is a fact, right, and there's either going to be no more GIFGAF or we're going to have to raise our prices a little bit, how much do you think raise the prices by, right? And that became the discussion. And so it was completely open, right? And it was very wide in terms of the responses that we got. Obviously, a lot of people said, no, we don't want any price rise whatsoever. And then other people, you know, yeah, gave us, you know, quite a lot of money on each text or each call that you did. And then eventually that kind of all came together where the community said, we have to, you know, get a little bit more structure in this question, right? So what is the kind of like the maximum that you would want to raise it by, or what's the minimum that you'd have to raise it by? So and just using all of that feedback, we got back together with the board and we sat down and, you know, we actually had a good discussion about that, which enabled me to then go back to that community and say, like, right, well, we have to raise it by a minimum of 1 pence and, you know, and a maximum of, you know, 3 pence or whatever it was, right? And that's then per minute or per call, because it was a mobile phone company. And again, started that whole discussion. And we also said, well, you know, if we, you know, raise it by a little bit more, then we can actually use that money to implement a lot of ideas that people had, right? Because I ran an ideas board on that community as well. And geez, you know, we had something like 20,000 ideas that people had. And so, you know, in order to implement some of these ideas, we did need to obviously, you know, increase a little bit of budget as well. And so, again, that whole conversation went back and forth, and that eventually turned out that, yes, there was a kind of like a minimum raise that the community wanted, but on each text, they would give us one extra penny. And just that one extra penny would allow us to already, you know, implement a whole bunch of ideas. And so now we had such a positive discussion about a price rise that when we actually looked at the sentiment at the end of it, that there was more positive sentiment on that, the whole discussion for a price rise than the negative sentiment. So, you know, I think it's always remained such a good example of, you know, if you're prepared for that discussion and you're willing to kind of like adjust the parameters around that and really engage with your community, you know, people are, well, generous, one, and open to that discussion. So, you know, I think those kind of things are, you know, that's the kind of strategies that you know, we'd look for when you're working with companies and they know that they have to make changes. Sometimes they're really positive changes and sometimes they're not such positive changes. But it's really around, like, how do you drop that in and how are you prepared and what people at, you know, the back end, so to speak, are available, right, for when that discussion kicks off. So, you know, do you have, the leaders of the business ready to actually engage with you? Right, so that you're not just a standalone community manager that just has to fight fires and they can't actually give that additional information. It is about, all right, great, I'm wrapping all of that information up. I can go back to these people and we can have a proper discussion, right? And then we go back to the community again. It's that real proper feedback loop. So, you know, it's not just, you know, one and done. It actually goes around a couple of times before you get to the end. And then, you know, as a business, you definitely can still make your decisions, right? And there is still, you can say no to things and, you know, just really, basically set the strategy that you want. But you include people in that decision making and you're looking for, you know, that kind of level of, all right, well, what is the best outcome for us? What's an acceptable outcome for us? And what is an outcome that we cannot accept? And if you kind of have, you know, those three kind of like different levels, that allows you to have a much more flexible discussion.
That is one of the best examples I've heard of when a community manager has essentially given members of their community a seat at the C-suite table. That's basically what you did. You gathered information, collected that, made it reasonable, kind of shifted out the not applicable responses, brought it to the table, said, this is essentially what we're looking for. I'm advocating for the community here. I'm trying to find a winner. It's almost like peace negotiations. I'm trying to find a winner for everybody here. What can we take back? I've heard quite a few times that community managers are always great at being, you know, if they're allowed into the correct rooms and the correct meetings, they can often be like, I hear you want to implement this feature, or I hear you want to do price rises. I can tell you that's fine, but not now, because right now the community sentiment is this because of X, Y, and Z. And they can just sometimes be a bit of a disconnect, but you're just filling that gap, and you're allowing members of the community and essentially your customers and often your most engaged customers to essentially have its seats at really important tables. And that's a perfect example of what you just gave there. It's a great story.
No, absolutely.
Which brings us really nicely onto your point too, Vincent, which a glimpse into is about metrics. So why don't we dig into that a little bit?
Yeah. So one of the things that I saw, again in the report, where kind of like, you know, community managers at the moment are looking to, you know, what are they measuring, right? And you know, you had kind of like, yeah, figured out with through the survey the top three metrics that cut across all of the different community types that you surveyed. And number one was online community participation, i.e. community size and growth, right? As being, you know, the main thing that people still measure. Although, you know, so for me, I'm not really surprised, but it is one of those difficult ones where, you know, community size and growth, one is really hard for a community manager to influence, right? The community manager doesn't have the budget, right? It's usually marketing or whatever it is, right? As a community manager, you're very responsible for the engagement, right? You're the one who can influence that, right? But what you cannot influence is magic up new members, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the only thing that you're responsible for is how well is that community receptive to new users, right? Mm-hmm. How friendly is it? And, you know, what are the discussions that are going on there? But at the end of the day, it's not like you have a marketing budget that you can go out there and say, like, all right, well, we'll need to get more, you know, clicks and all of that kind of stuff. And that will drive more members and pay people to become a member or whatever it is, right? As a community manager, you're very much responsible for what happens in that community. But it's very hard for a community manager to, you know, ever influence the growth of that community, right? Yeah. And so for me, the kind of thing that, you know, one of the thoughts I saw from Nicola Saunders from Sandesk was that she actually looks at customer satisfaction, right? What percentage of the customer base actually engages? And then eventually also they look at, you know, sales attribution connected to the community. Yeah. Those are the kind of measurements that I think are much more realistic, right? And when I think about customer satisfaction, I really am thinking about, community satisfaction, right? So how is that community being engaged? How happy are they in there? And like I said already, like, you know, is that the friendliness of that community, the openness to other members and how they react to repeat questions? Because a community inevitably will have many, many repeat questions. And so some communities, you can see that people are really annoyed by, I'll do a search, you know, stuff like that. But people are lazy, right? They don't do searches, right? They come in, they see a bunch of people. And that for me is also really important. When you come in as a new member, or maybe you haven't even signed up yet, right? And you're reading through how people are asking questions and how people are responding. Yeah. That bit is so important, because you read through it and you see people being really friendly and happily replying and, you know, excited about, you know, someone new coming in. That'll make you feel like, oh, okay, maybe I can answer a question. But there are yet other communities where you see that happening and people are, you know, really grumpy. And it's like, oh, another person asking the same question, you know, do a fucking search, you know, stuff like that. And I think, you know, from a community management perspective, it's that bit that you can really kind of like look at, right? And, you know, I think really looking at those kind of measurements, that's what, you know, really generates that. And so quality conversations, I think, is a really great one to measure. And when I say quality conversations, I'm talking about a conversation that has, say, like three or more people involved, right? And it's not the same three or more people. When you see constantly, you know, different conversations where there's a lot of different people involved, so it's not just one voice, now you know you've kind of got quite a healthy kind of community. So once you start measuring those kind of things, right, then I think now you're really measuring the kind of things that, that, you know, as a community manager that you can influence, which eventually will influence growth, right? But growth as a number on itself, I don't think that that necessarily, you know, reflects how good that community is, right? So you can have a community with, you know, I don't know, 10 million members. What does that mean, right? You also have communities that are really small, you know, 10 or 20 members that are really, really good, right? They're just so informative. And the people that are there are so high level in terms of their knowledge. And, you know, the sharing that happens there is just amazing. So size means very little when it comes to, you know, healthy communities with, you know, actually working on the results that you want. So yeah, that's kind of like my view on the whole metrics kind of thing. So yeah. And then, like, you know, Nicole said, you know, sales attribution is great. I also think retention is also, you know, a great measurement of, you know, community. So, and that one is also relatively easy to measure. Right. You know, you simply look at the amount of, you know, sales that you get from someone who does have a community account versus to someone who doesn't. Right. You look at someone, how long do they stay with you versus how long do they don't, if they don't have a community account. Again, you know, with GiftGaff, I started all of that stuff. Right. It was the first, you know, 2010 was the first company where we actually were able to do that. Right. Where we actually really looked at the metrics and started really measuring, you know, those people that had a community account versus those that didn't. And simply, you know, people reading the community, right? That alone increased their retention by 30%, right? People posting just once would increase their retention by 40%, right? We then had a payback system, right, which meant that if you participated in the community, you could earn a couple of pennies or pounds, right? Sure. It was really little. Sure. But just getting them a little bit of that kind of like reward would increase their retention by 50%, right? So, you know, it's really, really interesting. We did the same kind of work with Airbnb as well, right? And there we did really great stuff around creating holdout groups as well. And so, you know, I forgot, I think it's, you know, five times more, you know, that people would rent their house out, you know, simply from being a member of the community. So, you know, obviously for Airbnb, you know, it's a huge thing, right? So, you know, those kind of things are, just have such a huge impact and they're measurable, right? And then who cares about how big your community is? It's more a vanity metric than that it actually does anything to your bottom line.
It's about progression towards, you know, health rather than just a bigger number. And somebody a few years ago taught me the concept of like a value bank, and that the more value you can give to someone, you kind of keep giving them value, keep giving them value. And then when you need to make a withdrawal, say it is a price increase, actually people, because they, you have deposited so much value into them through the community or through whatever it is, through content, when you come to make a withdrawal, and that might be, you know, we really want some new beta testers, or we really want you to sign up for our newsletter, you're not doing it out of an empty stomach. You're doing it out of people that go, oh, actually, you've, for the last 2 years, you've been giving me value daily. I will do this thing you've asked me to do. I will go out and buy that game. I will do that thing because I don't feel indebted to you, but you've been enriching my life. So yeah, I will take that step and download your PDF or whatever it is, but you can't do that on an empty stomach because it just falls on dead ears.
Yeah. And that's, I think, you know, the interesting part around kind of like the purpose of the community. You know, when people start thinking about the purpose of their community, the immediate thought process is, all right, what do we want out of it? Right. So as a company or an organization, you're looking at your community and you're instantly thinking like, all right, so what do we want as a company? What do we want our members to do? Not that that's a bad thing, right? It's fine to recognize those things that you want your community to do and that you want them to be involved in. But that purpose always cuts two ways, right? If you're not looking at that purpose from a community member's perspective, where you're looking at, well, why are we having this community in the first place? Why are members coming here? What do our members want out of this community, right? If you start looking at that, right, now you're actually creating a place that is, you know, valuable for your members. So again, if you're looking at growth, well, you know, maybe look less around what you want out of it. Don't worry, you'll get those things anyway, right? But look more and work more towards those things that the community members want out of it, right? So what are you providing that your members want? It's those initiatives that will, you know, create that healthy community. And that's those initiatives that will make other people go like, well, you should really be here, because they're giving you the things that you're there for, right? I am excited to be here because this company or organization is, you know, giving me those things that I am excited about. And then you can start working on, all right, well, how do I get my members to be involved in the things, the outcomes that I like? So I think that's always quite a funny, you know, an interesting conversation when inevitably when you start those conversations and you're asking about purpose, it is almost, you know, always the standard thinking is like, all right, what do we want out of it? Rather than, oh, why are we actually setting this up?
That's a good point. Vincent, let's go on to your third and final key takeaway from the report.
Okay, let's see, the last kind of like takeaway. Yeah, it was about the lifespan of community members, right? Some as short as 45 days, which is quite interesting. And so, yeah, what community managers kind of like do to actually support, you know, the community members and I guess get them to stay for longer. And it was about recognizing their contributions. You know, 62% spend their time there. Replying promptly to member queries, almost 60% spend time there. Featuring people's content, you know, and providing great content and experiences. You know, they were kind of getting into the 40% buckets. Oh, and there's also give them a role at 25%. So these are the kind of things that community managers at the moment are looking for in terms of, yeah, increasing that retention of community members. All great things. I'm you know, very happy to see that list. There were a couple of things that you know, I found interesting to not see in there. And, you know, it's kind of like I have a little mantra around, you know, educate, don't moderate. It's something that I came up with many, many years ago with the idea that, you know, I don't really like moderation, right? Moderation is, you know, I don't know, the whole three strikes you're out kind of thing. I've never seen it work. And when people are doing things that are not according to your values, either they can be, you know, kind of like talked to, or they're just there trolling, right? And, you know, when you can have a conversation with someone and you can explain to them, you know, on a kind of like, yeah, nice and friendly basis as to why you don't like their behavior and why that doesn't really fit into the culture of your community, and they're interesting in having that discussion, you get a lot further than simply saying, all right, I'm removing that message. And, you know, other than that, you get like, you know, I don't know, some sort of automated message saying like, oh, you know, if you do that again, you know, then, you know, watch out because you'll get banned. Right. These people just create another account, start again.
Yeah.
Right. And so for me, it's always the education part there is so much more important. And so a lot of the time that I spend in my communities is around educating people, right? Getting them to understand the kind of behavior that we like to see. Right. And that could definitely be around recognizing their contributions. So it's positive as well as negative. Right. So when we see positive things, then we highlight those, right? And, you know, privately as well as publicly, right? Basically, you know, showing people as, you know, sort of like, hey, this is the kind of behavior that we really like, right? And yeah, when someone doesn't do something that nice, then it's usually only privately, right? And I would just, you know, yeah, bring him into a conversation and say, hey, man, kind of like saw what you did there. Not very nice, right? Like your impact here is going to have an impact on other members and, you know, those kind of things. So, yeah. You know, it's really, yeah, touching their humanity, right? And trying to, you know, get them on board with how you'd like to have this online environment working. And there will be people that, you know, just don't care, right? Well, fine, right? If you don't care and we can't do anything with that, then we're going to have to remove you from the community, right? So for me, there isn't sort of like, you know, oh, a day ban or a week ban or a month ban and all of that kind of stuff. It doesn't work. For me, it's you either have a conversation and people are receptive to that conversation and they will do it, or they're not receptive to the conversation at all and they just don't care, right? Well, then there's very little we can do, right? Then you're just clearly not part of the kind of community that we're trying to build here. And the other part is entertaining your members, right? So I was quite surprised to not, you know, really necessarily seeing that. I mean, possibly it's part of providing great content and experiences, but, you know, like, yeah, I think that is really important, right? I, you know, and also for the community manager, right? That is what makes your job fun. Right, actually being in that community and having a laugh with your community members, right?
Yeah,
actually having just a fun conversation, which isn't always about what the business or the organization wants or any of that kind of stuff. It's just literally, you know, having a laugh and a joke and, you know, doing some fun stuff with them. I guess maybe that's part of my background from, you know, computer games, where I used to just play games with people and set up all kinds of leagues and ladders and whatnot. And, you know, just have an enjoyable time. That I think, you know, it can be done in any kind of, you know, community environment. And yeah, I do think that is a good part of what a community manager needs to do, you know, and have an enjoyable time with the members that are there and, you know, making a joke and taking the piss and, you know, all that kind of stuff is incredibly important for me, having light conversations.
And with those last kind of two that you kind of, your suggestions for what could be on the list is around education and kind of entertainment and just joy in general around kind of being involved in the community. If it was like, if you're doing your job well, not only will you be the ones doing those things, but actually your advocates, your folk who are logging in every day, getting involved, will also kind of feel responsible enough that they go, oh, I see what you've done there, but that's not really how we do it here. That's not really a PlayStation sort of thing we do, or that's not really a blah, blah, blah sort of thing we do here. And this is why, because it's almost more powerful coming from, you know, not the teacher, not the person in charge, when someone's like, actually, that's not a thing we do here.
Yeah, no, you see that a lot. So, you know, you kind of like set the example and people are very quick to actually take up that culture. And kind of like repeat the culture that you set. So, you know, you do that as a community manager or a community team, and it very quickly becomes, you know, the standard of how people interact with each other within a community. And that's why we see with the Standing on Giants communities that we run, you know, we have very, very little, you know, kind of like trolling or bad content. We, you know, it's like you're talking about 0.003% or something like that. It's ridiculously little of content that we have to remove because, you know, we're doing that education piece and people will pull other people up when they're not, you know, responding nicely, when they're just angry rather than constructive. Right. And so, you know, of course you can be upset. You know, everyone's upset at times, but as long as you're constructive about it, we can still have a conversation about it, and that's okay. Yeah. Right. And so, you know, it's those kind of things that I think, you know, really help with, you know, how we manage our communities and you know, I mean, Lenovo Legion is another great example of that, right? It's a proper gaming community, but it's a super positive, fun, loving environment, right? Most game communities don't have that. It's all just angry people trolling each other and all of that kind of good stuff, right? But it's really around how you set the tone, right? And I think that, you know, because we really spent a lot of time and thought on that, we get all of these very, you know, kind of like, yeah, genuinely nice communities where people are genuinely nice to each other. And it's these kind of like little, you know, online, you know, safe havens, right? You know, kind of like these little online healthy oases that you get, you know, within the internet. And that's, for me, always kind of like the thing that we're trying to achieve, you know, in all these different communities that we're creating, especially, you know, this day and age where you get, you know, so much, you know, not such nice communities sometimes, right? Sure. When people are, you know, constantly each other and being aggressive and that kind of stuff. And I think, that's the kind of thing that we're really trying to achieve and successfully, thankfully.
It's really good. Vincent, I really appreciate your insight in the report, your insight today. Clearly, years of wisdom and experience and kind of weight behind what you're saying. I really love it when you are able to say and articulate a thought and then you come up with a great example of when it's happened and worked in the real world. It really gives kind of weight to what you're saying. So I really appreciate you being part of this conversation today.
No, thank you. I always enjoy having these conversations. So great to be here.
If people wanted to maybe reach out, ask you a question, where's the best place to find you online if people wanted to chat?
Well, obviously standingongiants.com is an easy way to get in contact with the company. And if you're thinking about those things, if you want to talk about it on a more personal level, then you can always reach out to me on LinkedIn, of course. And that's relatively easy to find, I think.
Fab. Well, that's it for today. We'll be back next week with another community champion chatting through some thoughts on the report. But until then, have a great day.